May the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. On a cold, clear afternoon in January of 2009, Janis Krooms left his job in Manhattan and boarded a ferry for his daily commute to where he lived in New Jersey. It was just a routine day, a routine commute, or so he thought. Little did this Latvian American know that by the time he reached the Jersey shore, he would have started a revolution. Well into the journey across the river, the ferry boat captain came on the loudspeaker and announced the boat would be making a detour to pick up additional passengers. The ferry turned and moved down the Hudson. Janis, along with the rest of the ferry's passengers, was stunned by what he saw. He snapped a picture and posted it on his Twitter account, along with the following short message: "There's a plane on the Hudson. I'm on a ferry going to pick up the people. Crazy." Janis probably didn't put much thought into his Twitter message. He had just seen a surreal sight: passengers of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 standing calmly on the wings of the plane that Captain Sully Sullenberger had just skillfully glided into the Hudson River after it hit a flock of geese during takeoff from LaGuardia Airport. I would imagine that all of us have seen this picture dubbed the Miracle on the Hudson. He merely snapped the photo, typed out a message of 83 characters, and sent it to his 170 Twitter followers before turning to help. But while Janis and the other ferry boat riders were assisting the passengers of Flight 1549 from their perch on the plane's wings, Janis's 170 Twitter followers retweeted his message, sending the news and the picture around the world. He had scooped the media with just one photo and 17 words. Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey later credited Janis with launching what one media outlet calls the Twitter revolution. Later that year, Twitter played an instrumental role in the disputed Iranian presidential elections, assisting young protesters in getting out their accusation of election fraud until the Iranian government shut down the internet entirely. Twitter and other social networking sites were pivotal in starting the domino effect experienced in early 2011, now called the Arab Spring, when grassroots protest after protest led to the toppling of many Arab dictatorships. A Twitter message, a tweet, is only 140 characters, around 20 to 30 words. It is amazing that something so infinitesimally small has the possibility to have such a colossal impact. Crazy. Twitter reminds me of a mustard seed or a bit of yeast. Today, we reach our final Sunday in the lectionary's exploration of Matthew's parable discourse, and Jesus is continuing his theme of the curious nature of the kingdom of heaven with images of mustard seeds, yeast, treasures, and fishing nets. 3 weeks ago, Chuck told us about the extravagant sower casting out seeds with almost abandon, so that the kingdom of heaven is always trying to take root somewhere. Last week, Aaron Jean challenged our thinking of what and who are wheat and what and who are weeds. As we wrap up this chapter of parables with today's gospel, I am struck by two pair of parables, stories of growth and of hope and of action. In the first pair, Jesus speaks of familiar images to those who are listening to him on the banks of the Sea of Galilee, images of mustard seeds and yeast. Mustard plants were common in this lush area around the sea, with the leaves used as a vegetable and its seeds ground to flavor meat dishes. It was also used as a poultice, which was applied to injuries. But Jesus notes the paradoxical nature of the mustard plant. From a tiny speck of a seed, it can grow into a tall bush, one so tall that birds settle in it just so that as they would a tree. Something that starts so tiny grows into a plant that feeds and nurtures both humans and animals. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like. And Jesus continues by next describing the kingdom of heaven as yeast or leaven. Leaven permeates flour, causing it to rise and expand, and begins to transform the flour into bread. What we might miss in this short kingdom of heaven parable, due to the use of first century dry measurements, is that the baker is taking just a bit of yeast or leaven and burying it into an extraordinary amount of flour. Three measures of flour Jesus speaks of is the equivalent of 5 gallons of flour. That is, if I did the conversion correctly. All of Jesus's listeners on the banks of Galilee in the first century know that 3 measures of flour will produce an abundance of bread, close to 110 pounds of bread from just a little bit of yeast. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like. I would imagine that through this first pair of parables, Jesus, as the commentator Raymond Brown suggests, may be encouraging his first century listeners to recognize the present small beginnings of the kingdom and its great future by using examples of extraordinary growth. I could imagine that message would be important for the early church to hear. And that may well be an encouraging message for the church in our times to hear as well, times that are seeing Christ's message of a future of hope and of abundance being overshadowed by planes being shot from the sky, warfare once again in the Holy Land, and children encountering danger to escape predators in their Central American homes. We are always needing to be reminded of God's vision for his creation and for our lives. That although it may seem we in the church are small and insignificant in the face of these seemingly constant and overwhelming local and global challenges, we have this hope of transformation and abundance that is at the heart of the gospel and is the work of the church and of our lives. What we do and how we live our lives daily could be the mustard seeds, the leaven that bring about God's vision not only for our lives, but for the church and for the world. While you may be asking yourselves what this message of the seeds and yeast means to you, the message of giving or using even a small amount of your gifts for the expansion of the kingdom and for the glory of God, I want to share with you what this story has to do with me. I have been encouraged to share with all of you in this my first sermon preached here at St. Paul's, a little of my story, how I came to find myself standing up here before you and serving among you. Well, let me see if I can summarize my lengthy and full life in a Twitter message of 140 characters or less. How does this sound? I love God. I thought God wanted me to give a little of myself each day to help build the kingdom. I was wrong. God wanted more. crazy. It is crazy, isn't it? We follow a God who has a crazy vision for his creation, a vision of growth, transformation, abundance. All of these parables in the 13th chapter of Matthew are stories of action. From Chuck, you heard of a God of action, constantly, recklessly sowing seeds, all having the potential to take root. Aaron Jean last week gave us a call to action, for which in a few minutes we will respond to as a community by taking up a second offering for the needs of the young refugees along the Texas border. Most of the time, we may be asked to take action in small ways to bring about God's vision. We may be the seeds or the leaven God would use for his glory and for the coming of the kingdom. And our actions may just be gifts of small mustard seeds or yeast that God transforms for use in building the kingdom. But we are to take action. And just what that action is differs from person to person and possibly from day to day. The second pair of parables in today's reading, which spoke to me, tells us how we are to take action. Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field found by someone who goes and sells all he has to buy that field. And the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant who finds a pearl of great value and goes and sells all he has to buy that pearl. Both of these people go and sell everything to buy that which they believe is of the highest value. Jesus is telling this final pair of parables to just his disciples, not to the crowd by the sea, suggesting to me that those who are Jesus's friends, those who are his disciples, see the value of his teaching, see the worth of the kingdom of heaven, and they will then go and sell everything and buy. In this last pair of parables, there is a sense of such great passion for God and God's kingdom that we cannot overlook or avoid. So what does this mean for us? What does this small bit of yeast or mustard seed look like for each of us that we are being asked to give each day of our lives for the growth of the kingdom of heaven? And what would our lives look like if we lived like we believe the extraordinary value of the kingdom? For me, it finally led to walk away from a stable job with a prestigious company, sell a home I loved, leave a lifetime of friends and business associates, and go live on a mountain in Tennessee for 3 years. But the response of Orthodox nun Maria Sobsova, who was martyred during World War II, was this: I am your message, Lord. Throw me like a blazing torch into the night so that all may see and understand what it means to be a disciple. Crazy.